You're listening to Bantering the Blue Shirts. This is a podcast that happens every single week where I, Joe Fortunato, am joined by my co-host.
Me.
Michael Murphy, who.
Me, Murphy.
Talks about the Rangers.
We talk about Rangers hockey, New York Rangers football hockey.
The Rangers, the New York Rangers football hockey. Let's do that hockey.
Soccer club.
Today's a surprise. Surprise. It's Tuesday at 8:14. And we were kind of punished with Jimmy VC a few weeks ago because VC's deal happened literally moments after we recorded the podcast. Now, Jeff Gordon signed Shea, Hayes, and Spooner all before this podcast. It's like a gift.
Yeah, he did us a solid, but... And also, it's like we have too much show this
week. Well, right now, we have too much to talk about. There's a lot to talk about.
There's too much show.
Boy, there's just so much to take in. Mike and I, by Mike and I mean really Mike, because he's the only one that plans for the show, planned out that we'll talk about Hayes last, because there's just so much to unpack there.
Yeah, there's a lot of mixed feelings about Hayes getting a one-year deal there, Joe.
There's a lot of, some things, yeah, particularly interesting things. So let's talk Shea first,
because
Spooner will be like the cream of the Oreo, if you will, of this podcast.
Let's start with Brady.
So Shea is the first domino to fall, Rangers style. He signs a six-year.
Terrible start, Joe.
$5.25 million deal. Him and Mika Zibanejad are the only two New York Rangers, as of this podcasting, signed beyond the year 2021. So that is an enormous flexibility, just powerhouse contract situation that we'll get into maybe next week. I don't even know if we'll have time this week. But Shea signed 6 years, $5.25 million. Mike, I want your thoughts. I want all of them. Just throw them at me.
I think most people are concerned that it's an overpay, but considering how much cap space the Rangers have and that the cap has gone up, you know, we talked a lot about just like give them essentially the Ryan McDonough deal, right? Like that. That made a lot of sense on paper. You know, McDonough's deal was 4.7 over 6 years when he signed it as a 24-year-old, and Shea signed his deal as a 24-year-old, 6 years, $5.25 million. So, maybe another $250K more than you might expect. We were all kind of hoping and expecting he might come in at five or under five. I was kind of hoping that would be the case, but. You know, this is a pretty clear signal from Gordon and the front office that this is a guy they want to be in the top four for the next half dozen years. I really don't mind this. Is it a little bit of an overpay? Sure. But, you know, we talked last week a lot about, you know, what's like the worst case scenario for Brady Shea. And the worst case scenario is that he'll be, you know, a pretty solid guy for the second pair. I mean, he's big. He can skate. So I'm okay with it. Are you good with it, Joe?
I think I agree with you in the sense that it is an overpay. There's certainly aspects of it that are surprising. The fact that it's 6 years is a pleasant surprise. The fact that the Rangers aren't going to bridge him and they're moving forward with this ideology that you need to take a risk on talent is surprising. Both of those things in a good way.
The modified no trade in the last 3 years.
Yeah, nothing to be alarmed at. If the Rangers have to make a decision on Shea, that's easy to kind of get around. What I think the real concern comes from for Shea, and interestingly enough, if you look at Blue Shirt Banter and the commenters and people on Twitter and Facebook, the party lines are kind of reversed from what you would expect. A lot of people wanted Shea to get a 1 or 2 year show me contract. And I was really against that. And what people don't seem to understand is, plain and simple, as blunt as I can be, NHL general managers are stupid. They're dumb people. Tom Wilson, yes, that Tom Wilson, got a 6 year, $5.1 million a year contract from the Washington Capitals for a magical 16-point playoff performance. He is a 0.26 point per game player in the NHL, and he got that big of a contract. The reason why I'm telling you this is because if Brady Shea replicates his freshman year offensive production of 39 points, which is not a ridiculous ask.
Not at all.
Under Quinn, he's going to get actual leadership. He's going to get actual development. He's going to get a constant partner and a constant role. We debated this on the last podcast. I think he's going to get power play time. But regardless, Shea had a 97% PDO last year, and he only had 25 points. If Shea is a 39-point defenseman when he comes off the show-me deal as a 26-year-old, which is what he would be if he signed a two-year deal with the Rangers, a player like that gets 6 to 6.5 to maybe crazy money from NHL teams. So this insinuation that the Rangers only saved a couple of $100,000 by locking Shea up long term is, it's a narrative. I don't know how to describe it to you. Is it totally possible that Shea just doesn't turn into what we think he is? Yes, it is.
Yeah.
But I don't think the Shea we saw his rookie year is in ridiculous. He had a 102 PDO, sure, but I don't think that's a ridiculous ask for him.
No,
he's getting better. Go ahead.
I don't blame the people who would have preferred to see, you know, a one-year deal or a bridge deal, because, you know, it was a sophomore season last season, and we've talked about it. You just got to throw out the whole season, really, for him and a lot of the guys there, which is tough because we're also trying to evaluate him, right? We're trying to evaluate which of these guys, you know, the Pionks and the John Gilmores, like who can actually be a part of the team, you know, the Rob O'Garas. And I look at that as like, yeah, I understand if you want to throw that year out and you want a show me year from Shea. And I also understand, you know, that the Rangers, particularly on the left side, already have a ton of prospects on the blue line. I mean, that's like a position of strength from an organizational standpoint right now, is the prospects coming up on that left side. You know, there's a lot of little things to be excited about, but I still, even with all of that considered, I still find myself being perfectly okay with this deal. This is, you know, he's the right sort of guy to start as, like, not a foundational guy, but a part of the core. You know, like, he's not the guy you build the blue line around, and that's why he's not, you know, a $7 million, $8 million player. But he's a guy who I think will end up being, you know, like a third, any, like on the depth chart, like a third defenseman. And, you know, on the first pair with Shattenkirk next year, that's fine for me. Let him have a frequent defensive partner. Tom wrote that great story about, you know, Shea and how crazy it was with how many partners he had, and, you know, just looking into all that and trying to understand, like, what the hell happened here. As you pointed out, his PDO, and, you know, there's a lot of factors that made Brady Shea look, both in terms of, you know, analytics and to the eye test, look like, you know, a fish out of water last season after his great rookie year. But I'm not that concerned. We've seen what he looks like when he's on his game. He has all the tools. Is it a risk? Of course it's a risk. But I feel like even if he doesn't pan out, he's going to be a second pair D. And to me, the worst case scenario is that he's like a number four guy. But I'm not even too concerned about that happening. I think he's, you know, he's a well above average NHL defenseman. And he's 24. And he's only played two seasons of NHL hockey. So we're still trying to figure out what he really is. You know, he is 24, but just remember, it's two seasons of NHL hockey. So when we look at those, you know, if you go to Cap Friendly and you dig around those comparables, then you get an idea of, you know, other guys who have similar deals. And, you know, I weighted the, you know, the comparables tool to the signing date similarity, and, as, you know, kind of, so we could talk about more recent deals. Like, everyone, you know, Shane in particular, I know she was on the Blue Shirts Breakaway podcast. She talked about hoping for Gostisbehere, like a deal like Gostisbehere's deal, right? Where it was 6 years at $4.5 million. And of course, right now that looks like a huge deal. And we would have been jumping for joy if Shea signed that deal. But, you know, last offseason, Dmitry Orlov, $5.1 million. Parayko last offseason, $5.5 million for a five-year deal. Jacob Slavin, last offseason, a seven-year deal for $5.3 million. I mean, all those guys, you know, with the exception of probably Orlov, are guys you'd rather have over than Brady Shea. But, you know, that's kind of what these young guys are getting right now that are not getting the bridge deal. You sign them and you lock them up, and if they're a top four guy, they get in the $5 million range. Like, that's just what happens now.
And that's the risk, right? Is that if you're upset with this deal, you're thinking to yourself, oh, Shea really isn't going to be that much more expensive. But like I said, I disagree with you, because the reality of the situation is defensemen who are 26 years old, who have 40 points, and again, we're kind of projecting Shea to be that rookie year type player, those guys do not fall off of trees. And the more important point is that if the Rangers took a gamble here, right, and they did, let's be honest, and Shea is a number four defenseman, he's a slightly overpaid number four defenseman. Can you find, you know, number four defensemen that are cheaper than $4 million? Of course you can. But if Shea kind of solidifies himself as a solid second pair guy, it's an overpay. You're not talking Girardi or Stahl level overpay.
Yeah,
Shea's going to be 30 when his deal ends. He's not going to lose his legs by then. He's not going to lose his speed, his elusiveness. There's a lot of things to like about Shea. And if you believe in the school of thought that there's really been no development for these young players under the thumb of Vigneault, and I don't think that's a ridiculous thing to say, then the best is yet to come from Brady Shea. And if for whatever reason he becomes a 45 or a 50-point guy, and I'm not saying he will, you're just omitting that risk. There's no need to take the risk with Shea. You don't give a guy like Shea a show-me contract if you can help it. Now, would I have liked to see this deal in the upper fours? Yes, I absolutely would have.
But I would have loved to see it.
Yes, it would have been absolutely wonderful. I'm not telling you there's no risk here. I'm just telling you it's not worth, like, throwing your... There were 4 billion comments about how stupid this was. I don't buy into that theory. I get it. It's a risk.
It's not that bad. It's really not that bad.
It's Calvin DeHaan got what, like 4.25 or something, and the only reason he didn't get more was because he's coming off surgery. He's a minute-eating defenseman in with the Islanders. Not a ton of offense out of him. I think Shea has pretty good metrics, and a lot of people are pointing to last year to be like, well, look, this is not – look at what you're getting. But you almost can't accept it because you're talking about a guy who was in a very unfavorable situation.
Yeah.
Context, and everybody knows it.
Crucial with, especially when we talk about analytics, and to understand what that defense was like and how poorly Vigneault did in terms of just, you know, not just the strategy part of it, but the way he deployed his defenders. You know, he didn't put anyone really in a position to succeed is the bottom line. Like, it sounds like a dramatic statement, but no one on that blue line was put into a position to succeed. And Shea, above all else, you know, especially when Shattenkirk got knocked out of the lineup, you know, it was pretty grim in terms of he was asked to be, you know, close to superhuman. And, you know, being asked to play in that role when, you know, he's changing his defensive partner every 3 games is asking a lot for a guy who's in his second year in the NHL and in a contract year. Like, you know, I do appreciate the fact that his numbers weren't great, and that he had an unsustainable PDO in that first year. But again, you have to look at the full picture. Look at both seasons and understand that in reality he's somewhere. It's not just that he's somewhere in the middle of those two performances. It's much more likely that he's closer to the guy we saw in the rookie year because of the chaos of that blue line last year. Right? Like, you have to acknowledge the influence of just that horrible garbage tire fire that was the Rangers defense. It dragged everyone down. It made Ryan McDonagh look awful, and he was playing awful. Everyone looked awful. You know, Mark Stahl looked okay, but that says just how bad things were. Like, Mark Stahl's head was above the water.
You know, I get that the Rangers are betting on the freshman year Shea, but the detractors of this deal are betting on the sophomore year Shea.
Yeah.
And the Rangers, there's a risk with every long-term contract, right? There's a semblance of risk for everything. But there's more risk to me that Shea proves that he can get overpaid by the market than there is that Shea proves that he's massively overpaid. And at the end of the day, I think Gordon saw it the same way, and he signed Shea long term. The people who are upset about this, who are kicking and screaming, who are going crazy, if this contract really turns out to be that bad, there is always a market for reclamation projects of a 27 or 28-year-old defenseman who could skate like the wind.
He was a first-round pick. Yeah,
I would not be overly concerned about this deal at all. The Rangers could get out of it if they have to, and I don't think they're going to have to. So I get it. There's a risk. I understand. I totally appreciate thinking to yourself, wow, I would have rathered it be quite a bit cheaper, because I am the same way. But it's not worth getting worked up about. It's really not. No, I don't think it's that big of a deal. And you're locking down somebody who could be one of your better defensemen for a long time. You have Shattenkirk and you have Shea. And that's really it on that blue line right now.
Yeah, and furthermore, you need those guys, right? You're going to have all these kids around. You know,
show them the way, Michael. Yeah. Show them the way. On the magical flying carpet. I will show you the world. Vigneault can't hurt you anymore. David Quinn is here and he's going to get to know you. That was pretty good.
I didn't want to say anything. I just wanted to see how long you would do that.
I had more, but I figured the people were done with it. So
we're trying to convince people to see us live in New York.
You're right, at the Forum. So August 25th, I'm going to remind you again at the end of the show, but 8:25 at the Forum, you can come see me and Michael. I am going to have an anxiety attack, and Mike will be taking care of me. So
yeah, that's the way that'll happen.
So that's the way that that's going.
I'm starting to look forward to it, to be honest with you.
You should be. It's going to be a good time. There are tickets left, not a ton of tickets, but tickets left. So go and purchase them. It's $20, and that includes a free beer. And then you get to throw things at me because you don't want to see me, but you do want to see Mike. So that'll be wonderful. All right. Do we have anything else with Shea?
No, I don't think so. I'm sure we're going to talk about him more later in the summer, but obviously we've just got so much show, Joe. We got so many things to get into.
Should I peruse the comments and see if there's any questions about Shea?
No.
And tie it in? No, we do it all at the end.
If you were good at this, you would have done that before the show.
Yeah,
began.
But you knew that that wasn't happening.
You could have done it while you were in the waiting room at the dentist, which is where you were today.
But I wasn't in the waiting room all that long. I was in the chair rather than the room.
Well, how many questions could there have possibly been?
We have more questions than we've ever gotten.
God damn it.
By like a wide margin. All right, so we move on.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
I know we have a very full show, but this is important to me. When you were a kid at the dentist, did your dentist have like those little water games where you held it in your hands and you pressed the buttons, right? And it would push air into this water thing and it would like launch rings in this little like sea monkey's tank?
I know what you're talking about, but the answer is no.
Oh. Whatever happened to those? Those fell out of favor.
They did fall out of favor. I don't know. I have no idea. I do remember playing them, though.
I remember playing them at the dentist.
Yeah, that was our childhood, though. These days, kids are just on their phones, or they have the Nintendo Switch or something.
They're doing fidget spinners.
Yeah, they're doing real stuff.
And their Pogs and their...
No, Pogs was us, because we didn't have any type of electronic. No. Pokemon cards, like everything that was fantastic when I was a child, had no electricness whatsoever, except for the Game Boy. And the Game Boy was like the greatest thing in the world. And today we would stomp out a Game Boy because it's garbage.
I still remember the first kid who came to school with a Game Boy Color and how that was like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. How many colors are there now?
There's like, three. There's three, red, green, and blue. My God.
There's even the what?
It's amazing.
The Pokemon have colors?
I do remember the Pokemon having colors. That's awesome. All right, so Spooner. Spooner signed today a 2-year, $4 million a year deal. It is the twin of the Nemestikov contract. And I need to say something off the bat, right now.
Off the bat.
Okay, I'm saying it to you right now, right off the bat. Sometimes off the bat, just off the bat. Ryan Spooner wanted to stay in New York for 2 years. Kevin Hayes did not want to stay in New York for 2 years. Period. End of story. Everybody is asking why the Rangers would sign Ryan Spooner to 2 years and Hayes to 1 year. You're not playing NHL 19. You can't. These guys are not robots, and this is a lot more about Hayes than it is for Spooner, but Spooner wanted the second year. Kevin Hayes did not. Period. End of story. You can't force a player to take a deal they don't want to take. Moving back to Spooner, and this is actually another point that kind of has to do with Hayes, I am astounded. I would have bet you my bottom dollar. Nemestikov, Spooner, VC, Hayes, and Zibanejad would not all be on the team on the opening night roster. And here we are. That's exactly what's going to happen. And where I'm tying this back into Hayes is that I think this proves that all of the, oh, the Rangers should have traded Hayes stuff, the market just wasn't there. Because I don't think Gordon expected Nemestikov and Spooner to be here too, at least not both of them. And if there wasn't a market for either of them, there's not a market for Kevin Hayes. So am I surprised that Ryan Spooner's back? Yes, in a sense. I like Spooner. I think he's a good player. He's in that two-year window of we don't care. Anybody who's upset with the Spooner and Nemestikov deal or even the VC deal, I don't know what to tell you. It's the two-year window. The Rangers could sign me to a contract. It's a two-year window. It doesn't matter. So Spooner is going to be a safety net for the kids in case they're not ready. He's going to add some offense. The Rangers have a relatively deep top nine, which is actually kind of nice. So I like Spooner. I think he's trade bait. I think so is Nemestikov. But you should have zero concerns about Ryan Spooner being signed for 2 years, $8 million. None. And that's the end of my rant. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I think it is a relatively fair concern to worry if he's not a rental for the deadline. So he would have to go to a different suitor, you know, a team that's willing to pay that $4 million next year if he is moved at this upcoming deadline. And
but do you think that's a ridiculous ask?
Not really.
Because I don't.
Not at all, no.
Based on the offense that Spooner's put up in his career, even if Spooner is a 45-point player next year, and I don't think that's ridiculous. It's probably on the conservative end, to be completely honest with you. He's worth that contract.
He's a guy that teams would look at as, you know, a guy to spark a power play unit. You know, he can be.
And the Rangers can eat salary. They could just pour some blue cheese on that salary and just eat it.
That's absolutely true. I think some people might be thinking, oh, you know, maybe because of that second year of the contract, we go down from, let's say, just arbitrarily, like maybe there's eight suitors if he had a one-year deal and now there's five suitors or something like that, right? But again, I don't see that as a huge issue.
It's 2 years. It's Spooner. You're getting, even if you get the bad Spooner, it's 2 years. Who cares?
The bad Spooner.
And I don't think you're going to get the bad Spooner because I do think he fits well in. He's kind of what Quinn wants, right? He's a bigger body. He's a little bit. I wouldn't exactly call him a tough guy or a gritty player, but yeah, but he's thick as a friggin' warthog. Are warthogs thick?
Like Pumbaa from
Yeah, there you go, Pumbaa.
He's 187 pounds and 5'10".
I would not call him a physical player. I don't even know if I'd call him a gritty player, but I think he plays to the tougher areas of the ice. I liked what I saw from Spooner. I really did.
I don't see him as thick at all. His favorite animal is a giraffe. He has a giraffe tattoo. He's got a long neck.
He has a giraffe tattoo?
Apparently.
But what does his favorite animal have to do with how thick he is?
I'm just saying, if that's his spirit animal, if that's his Patronus in the Harry Potter world, that would kind of you would kind of glean that from his general physique.
I guess so.
When I see Spooner, I don't see a warthog. I see like an emu or a another skinny bird with scrawny legs.
See, I think I thought Spooner was a thicker
He's
player.
5'10".
Yeah, thick. I'm talking about thick. I'm talking about like
7 pounds, 5'10". I mean,
yeah, that's thick. It's like linebacker thick.
Can you stop saying the word thick?
Just 70 pounds. I think he brings enough that Quinn is going to like him. But that was the only point that I was trying to make.
On last year's Rangers team, Joe.
Before Mike shot it down.
Ryan Spooner was in the bottom fifth in terms of the weight of players.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about like weight. I'm talking
what
about
are we
build.
Talking about?
Like build. So, I feel like he's a thick hockey player, that's all. This is now becoming a weird conversation.
You decide to say the word thick.
I did decide to play the word thick. I didn't expect you to just call me on it. I don't know. That's what I think of when I see him. He's not a gritty player. I wouldn't consider him a tough player, but I also don't think he's a finesse player.
He's a perimeter player.
He's absolutely a perimeter player, but I do think he plays bigger than his frame, if you will. I'm just giving you the sense that I got from the 20 games that I watched him. This is exactly why I don't rely on the eye test alone.
No, that's fine. I'm not disagreeing with you. I just wouldn't have called him
thick boy. He's a thick player. Thicker player.
Like Zuccarello, I would say, yeah, he's a thick boy. You know?
No, see, that's ridiculous. I wouldn't consider Zuccarello thick at all.
Zuccarello's got Christmas hams for thighs. What are you talking about?
No, that was St. Louis. St. Louis was thick.
No, St. Louis and Zuccarello both have thick thighs.
No, St. Louis was a monster. Zuccarello's
center of gravity is unbelievable.
I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying I would never call Zuccarello a thick player.
Tell me what you're saying.
Zuccarello's got that thigh gap that everybody's looking for. the awkward silence after I said that is exactly what was earned.
Zuccarello
for that
is 4 inches shorter than Spooner and only 8 pounds lighter than him.
See, then that's interesting. How much does Zuccarello weigh? 175?
180.
Oh boy, all right, you may have me. You may have me on that one. But see, the difference is Zuccarello, I would say, does play a physical, gritty game.
Yeah, he takes
100%.
He gives zero fucks for sure.
I don't think that Spooner plays that game ever. I don't think Spooner's ever played that game. Perimeter player is a good way to put it. I don't like
Spooner is the guy who's like using his stick to gather up the dropped gloves of his teammates when there's a scrum.
Right, but I do think Spooner doesn't have any issues going into the tougher areas of the ice with or without the puck. And that was really the only point.
He'll go into the corners. I don't think he's a guy who goes to the front of the net, but that's because he likes to have the puck and look.
He likes to play. Yeah, he likes to work.
He's not looking for, you know, the Jimmy Vesey goals.
But the corners are just as tough, maybe tougher in some instances than the front of the net.
You don't know. Not in the modern game. I don't think so.
Well, in the modern game, I'd say more than the older game. Because in the modern game, that's where you're throwing your hits and you're getting physicals in the corners because everybody's moving towards the puck.
There used to be like felonies committed in front of the goal crease.
What's the key word? What is the key word of what you just said? Used to be. It used to be.
I know what you're getting at, but I think it's still. If I had a choice, if I was a little guy, I would choose to battle in the corners rather than, you know.
You get smashed into the boards. It's the body and the boards. Forget that. Put me in front of the net. I'll take my cross checks and, you know, whack at some shins. Score a goal or two.
How many teams put a little guy in front of the net, Joe?
None. Why would you? I'm just saying. As a little guy, I think I'd rather be in front of the net than I would be in the corners. It's not. Now, 15 years ago, I would skate away from the front of the net, even if I had the puck. If I'm a little guy, because you're just going to get walloped. They're going to use their friggin' sticks like an axe and cut you down. But these days, it's all about speed and skill.
You had to be real thick back then.
You had to be thick. Yeah, really thick. I don't even remember what we were talking about.
Spooner being thick.
Yeah, well, before that even brought that up. I think Spooner is a good hockey player. I'm happy he's sticking around. I would have preferred the Rangers have, you know, I guess gotten good value for him, but it's very clear that that was not on the horizon because by every account possible, the New York Rangers tried to trade Ryan Spooner.
Yeah, it's even, you know, on draft day when Gort was getting interviewed and, you know, he was asked, you know, have you talked to the free agents and, you know, their agents and their camps? And he said, everyone but Spooner. And, like, that in and of itself was kind of a pretty profound statement, right? That, you know, he was kind of the afterthought, and now here we are, Joe, with Vlad and Spooner both being signed to longer-term deals than Kevin Hayes. This is not at all what anyone, I think, expected. You know, I don't know. I highly, highly, highly doubt that Jeff Gorton, you know, saw this in the tarot cards like 2 weeks ago when he was trying to figure out, you know, what the hell to do with Kevin Hayes and, you know, getting Vlad signed and everything else. Like, I find myself in disbelief that all three guys are signed and that, you know, Hayes is the guy who's has a 1-year deal. I would have told you for sure that it would have been Spooner, especially after you and I kind of had that simultaneous eureka moment where it's like, yeah, just let him get arbitration, 1 year deal, done, trade him, you know, give him a contract he can get traded on. But, you know, it's also worth saying, by the way, to tie into that, that he might demand more of a return in a deadline day deal because he can be there for a second year, right?
Yeah, like, that's
something
that
people rarely give credit to that. It's not like you're trading a guy, you know, who has 3 or 4 years left on his deal and, you know, he might not be the same player in 3 years. Like, you can safely assume that from 1 year to the next, a guy is not going to change too dramatically. So I have no problem with 2 years for Spooner. It's fine. I think it's just very interesting the way this all unfolded. And, you know, looking at, like, the comparables, like you said, is the twin of the deal is you got the same deal as Vlad. So, and, you know, who do you think is more valuable? Who do you think is more likely, you know, to maybe not be traded is an interesting question. But, you know, Vlad's a year younger. You know, they've both played roughly the same amount of NHL games. And, you know, Spooner's been a little more productive in his career than Vlad. But, you know, they're both kind of middle six guys. So it's going to be pretty interesting to see what happens with who's still there when the smoke clears. But does this bring us to the Kevin Hayes 1 year contract finally?
I guess it does.
Oh boy.
So this is the powder keg, if you will, of the three of them. Here's what we know. We know that the New York Rangers and Kevin Hayes were negotiating one of two options, a 1 year deal or a 6 year deal, or a 5 or 6 year deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Larry Brooks reported that the ask was between $5.5 million and $6 million for the long-term deal.
Pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I was about to say, Mike, that's absolutely reasonable. What the holdup appears to be, and this is my speculation, but it's easy speculation, is a no-movement clause or a no-trade clause. And as I put in my article today about the situation, which was wonderfully written, if I do say so myself, these guys are not robots on an NHL 19 screen. You're not negotiating with an AI. You're negotiating with a player and his agent who are very well aware that the New York Rangers have Filip Hedl, Elias Andersson, and Brett Howden in the wings, and they are looking for flexibility at center somewhere down the line. So if you are Kevin Hayes and you have an option of signing a 1 year deal that will take you directly to unrestricted free agency, whereas a 26-year-old, you hold all the cards to wherever you go and you will be overpaid by a million teams if you want to, or sign a 5 or 6 year deal with the Rangers, knowing you're not going to get no movement or no trade clause protection and not have any control of your destiny, which would you pick? And this was the point that I was making before about Spooner. Hayes did not want a 2 year deal. He wanted a 1 year deal, or he wanted a 5 or 6 year deal, and he got a 1 year deal. Yes, this is unfortunate because it definitely hurts the trade value that the Rangers are going to have for Hayes. I would tell you with certainty that Kevin Hayes is not going to be a New York Ranger at this time next year. The Rangers could examine a sign and trade with him as of January 1st, and that's something that I want to touch on later because I think there's a little bit of showmanship on this contract. But this is not a matter of Jeff Gordon not doing his job. Everybody's on him. If you knew this was possible, why didn't you trade Kevin Hayes at the trade deadline? Because you can't. If there's no market out there, there's no market out there. Tavares held up the market. Erik Karlsson held up the market. The Rangers got less for McDonough and Miller because Karlsson held up the market. And the same people who are bitching and moaning about the fact that Gordon didn't get enough back for McDonough would be the same people who would be complaining if Gordon moved Hayes in that type of an environment. The Rangers tried to move Hayes. They tried to move him at the deadline, and they tried to move him harder at the draft, and there was nothing available. There were rumors circulating about Hayes for weeks. Those don't come out of the blue. They don't come out of nothing. At some point, you need to trust that the deal wasn't there. I am as unhappy as you are, that this is the way that it's falling out, because I do like Hayes and I would have absolutely committed to him long term. But if the Rangers had to make a decision internally about Hayes and Zibanejad, who has no trade protection, by the way, they picked Zibanejad. And it is what it is. That's the decision they made. So if you want to be mad about the decision, you could be mad about the decision. But this ideology that, oh, they should have just signed Hayes to a long-term deal, or they should have just given Hayes 2 years or 3 years, it's not the way that it works. There's two sides to a negotiation. And if Spooner and Namestnikov being back on this team have shown or proven anything to you, it should be that there was no trade market, because they would not be here if there was. Hayes was in a situation where he happened to have a significant amount of leverage, because he would have went to arbitration happily, taken a one-year deal, and become an unrestricted free agent. If he was in a different scenario where there were RFA years that had to be bought out and there were all sorts of other things tying him to the Rangers, I think this would have been a different situation. But it wasn't. Hayes had the leverage and he used it. And he got a one-year deal at a little bit of an overpay. And again, I'll get into that after Mike talks. And it is what it is. You can be upset about it all you want. I don't know what you thought Gordon could do here. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, yeah, I think I wanted to just point out, like, Jacob Trouba, who's a name we've heard attached to the Rangers, you know, for a couple of years now, right? And Trouba signed a one-year deal, $5.5 million. Brock Nelson of the Islanders had a 19-goal season last season. 2 years ago, he had a 20-goal season. 26 years old, he signed a one-year deal. Also a 26-year-old. Forward like Kevin Hayes, he signed a $4.25 million 1 year contract. Like you said, Joe, these guys, it's not just automatic that a guy wants to sign, you know, that big deal to keep him with the team. And there are always two sides of it. And I think what's so kind of intriguing about what's happened with Hayes is, to me, is what's in New York's system right now in terms of the organizational depth, because I don't think enough has been said about, you know, how high the front office seems to be on Brett Howden, and how, you know, he projects to be a middle six center, you know, more likely a third line center, but a very good third line center. And when you have that on top of, you know, Philip and Elias, and then Mika Zibanejad, as you pointed out, is one of the two Rangers who signed past, you know, the next few years. He's one of the few guys who's going to be here kind of long-term. That's, you're talking about a lot of centers already. And you already have Vlad in the organization. And Vlad, no matter which way you cut it, was going to cost significantly less than Kevin Hayes ever would. And, yeah, it gets pretty interesting when you look at, you know, where Kevin Hayes fits in and whether or not the Rangers could have, you know, found a way to make him happy and found a price point that he would agree with. And I think what we learned here is that the two sides just had a different idea of what was happening. And this, you know, it goes without saying, really, that this is kind of the writing on the wall for Kevin Hayes' time in New York, which is a shame because he was really, you know, probably the best story to come out of last season, right? In terms of guys who, you know, climbed their way to the top of the garbage pile and, you know, planted a flag on top of it and looked good, just, you know, in spite of everything unfolding around them. I mean, he had a great year last year. I was talking to, you know, one of my brothers about Hayes and the evolution in his game. Like, when he started, what were we saying about Hayes? He's like, oh, you know, one-dimensional, like, playmaking guy, pass first, doesn't shoot enough. And where are we now, a few years later? Kevin Hayes is a 25-goal scorer, a well-regarded two-way center who, you know, not a first-line guy by any stretch, but, like, a very solid second-line center. Like, he's really done what you would hope a young center would do in this league. And, you know, he has a big body. He's great at 5-on-5. In spite of how good he is with his passing ability and playmaking ability, he hasn't really gotten a chance to make an impact on the power play. And, you know, if a team can lock into that, then maybe Hayes looks a lot more like a $6.5 million center. I don't know. We'll have to see kind of what happens there. But this is this was a surprise to me, but I'm not like picking my jaw up off the floor here. I feel like this was it felt like something spooky was going to happen. You know, with Thursday was the day of the arbitration, and you know, this news, you know, unfolded just the other day here, and now we're looking at Kevin Hayes with, you know, he's less than a year away from being an unrestricted free agent, Joe. It's kind of a weird, I don't think either of us really saw this one coming.
No, I was definitely surprised when the Brooks report came out, but the more that you think about it, and I put this question to the banter today too, put yourself in Kevin Hayes' shoes.
Yeah.
What would you do? You know that this is something that's happening, right?
And
you know the Rangers are going to make a decision on you or Zibanejad. Why would you sign a long-term deal without protection? Honestly, you wouldn't. You wouldn't. So when you look at him and you say, okay, I guess you don't have anywhere else to go with this, which is really what ended up happening, then that's what ended up happening. You can be upset about the situation. I'm upset about the situation. I don't want to see, you know, Hayes leave. I think Hayes is a great player, one of the better primary point producers in the NHL. I think Hayes is going to be the period biggest period riser, period, under Quinn this year. And I don't know. The Rangers, he's not going to be a Ranger next year. And if he is a Ranger next year, the Rangers are kind of effed because they have to make unbelievable strides to keep him around. He's going to be twice as expensive because why wouldn't he test free agency at this point?
Yeah, especially when, I mean, everyone and their uncle knows that, you know, Johnny Gaudreau and Kevin Hayes would love to play together, right? I mean, if we're placing bets on where he's likely to end up, I mean, Calgary is a pretty natural fit, but the bottom line is there's plenty of teams that could use a second line center, especially one coming off of a career year. And, you know, like, what does Hayes do? Like, you want a guy with size? You know, check. You want a guy who's under 30? Check. You want a guy who you feel like you can say to him, all right, well, we're willing to commit to you and give you a big deal. He's a guy who's now ready for that, you know, in the right situation, he will sign that contract. But he's going to go where he wants to go. And like you said, he's going to seek, you know, protection for that contract because, you know, like a lot of guys who have accomplished what he's accomplished in his career, he feels he's earned that. And, you know, to some extent, I think he has. It's part of the, you know, the salary cap and the rights that players have to the terms in their contracts. And, you know, if I was in the NHL and I was a player, I would, like, how much money would you be willing to, quote-unquote, leave on the table to have that, you know, that security and knowing that you're going to be where you want to be? And I guess none of us really know until, you know, we find ourselves in those shoes. But to me, I feel like this is kind of I would hesitate to call it an unfortunate ending. It's just kind of unexpected, right? I mean, there's still a lot of potential for Kevin Hayes to become valuable assets for the Rangers. I think Brooks was saying, you know, something like a late first-round pick is what Kevin Hayes is going to become. If I'm misquoting, I apologize. But it is kind of, you know, thought-provoking to me that it feels like a lot of people are already running around kind of, you know, saying, you know, the world is ending because of Hayes signing this one-year deal and how stupid it is and how big of a mistake it is. But, you know, it's like you said, Joe, there's a lot of factors at play here. And just because this is a one-year deal doesn't mean this can't have a happy ending for the Rangers in terms of a move that improves the team in the context of this rebuild, because that's really what we're talking about here.
Right, and if nothing else, the Rangers have an unbelievable amount of trade assets for this trade deadline. They have Hayes, they have Spooner, they have Nemestikov, in a sense they have VC. So there are options here for the Rangers to continue to make things happen. But I know a lot of people don't love hearing that, but it is what it is. The Hayes thing is unfortunate. I think Hayes may be one of, if not the most attractive piece on the free agent or on the trade market this year, which is a great thing. It's a wonderful thing. And here was the other point that I was going to make. The Hayes AAV is a little bit surprising in that for a one-year deal, you'd think he would have gotten far less than $5.17 million. Because the Rangers could have absolutely played hardball, gone into arbitration with a $4 million a year ask, and have signed him to a $4.5 million deal. What I think this is I think this is Gordon saying to Hayes, I will give you good faith money right now, but when it comes time to talk about other teams, I want to do a sign and trade with you if we move you. And that's where the Rangers are going to have the most value, right? That's where they're going to get the most value out of Kevin Hayes. And he needs to be amicable to that because Hayes kind of holds the cards now. If he doesn't want to do a sign and trade, the Rangers are going to trade him as a pure rental, right? And why would you take Hayes as a pure rental if you don't know whether or not you're going to sign him long-term afterwards? You're going to figure that out, and then you're going to make an offer for him. A sign and trade would net quite a bit more money. Maybe that's in the cards. Maybe it's not. I don't know. But this AAV seems like it's a little bit of a good faith showing from Gordon to Hayes that we're going to play ball right now. We want you to play ball when it's time for you to play ball. And, you know, who's to say? But I do think his time as a Ranger is over. And I think that's sad because I think he was a hell of a Ranger. And, I think he's a good hockey player. I think he's a really good hockey player. So that's fun. You ready for questions, Mike? Rapid fire questions?
I am ready.
Is there anything else we need to talk about?
I don't know. You know, we had other stuff we were planning to talk about this week, but we can talk about it kind of next week and as we kind of unfold all this news. And really, you know, we've been waiting for, you know, these RFAs to get done all summer so far. And now, you know, this is the last day in July that we're recording. And now that it's all done. And, you know, that's kind of crazy. But we kind of have a better question mark idea of what next year's team is going to be.
Yeah, question.
Just kind of have to figure out what kids are going to be there and, you know, what the hell they do with Hayes on an expiring contract and all that stuff. But yeah, let's go ahead and dive into questions. I'm ready for questions.
Dive into the questions. Alex Gardner. Day after 18-19 trade deadline, who is playing on the wings for the New York Rangers? Do they move Kreider to try to maximize the return with two runs a la Mac, meaning McDonough? Is Hedl kicked out to the wing? The whole forward group seems very wide open, but left wing, right wing are especially intriguing. Mike, go.
That is an interesting call. I think Zouk is gone.
I agree.
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if Vlad sticks around, but Spooner is dealt. I feel like only one of them will go, especially now that Hayes is on this contract, right? Because I feel like Zuccarello will go, and then Kevin Hayes will go. So you start to ask yourself, well, how many guys can they possibly ship out here? But, you know, there's obviously Kreider has that, you know, the 2 years left on his deal. He's also 27, so he's a year older than Hayes. But, you know, maybe, like you said, Joe, and it feels like the Rangers might want to make him a captain.
I get that sense, too.
Yeah, and I can't disagree with that, given what we've seen from Kreider. And, you know, he's coming off of a great, you know, performance at the World Cup and everything. So I like... No, not the World Cup, the World Championship.
God, you're so stupid. World Cup is soccer.
Well, it's both, but yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's easier to answer the guys who will be gone, and that's what I've been doing. But, you know, VC I think will still be around. Jesper, obviously. Booch will be around. Cody McLeod's not going anywhere except for Hartford.
And, he's not going there either. Yeah. Yeah, I pretty much agree with what you said. Assuming that Nemestikov and Spooner are wingers, which I think next year they will be, because I don't see Hedl or Anderson going
to the wing. You kind of have to make them wingers,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, I think Zuccarello's gone, I think Spooner's gone, and I think Hayes is gone. Or, you know what, call it one of Spooner / Nemestikov. I think
he's
gone.
Yeah, that's where I stand, yeah.
So that would be my answer to that question. Alex Gardner. Patreon supporter, patreon.com/blueshirtbanter.
Makes him just a little bit better than
if,
other
yeah, if you're not donating, you are an awful person, according to Mike.
That's not true.
Jim Dangles, who would win in a cage match between you and me?
As in Joe and Mike?
Yes. I have a black belt, so I want that out there.
You have a black belt in what?
Taekwondo.
You can't even say it correctly, so I doubt it.
I would win. 100%.
I don't know. Did you grow up with brothers?
I did not. No. See, you may Yeah, that's definitely
wrestling and
thing.
Absorbing punches and like being bitten. Like I know how to, but I'm also a very gentle soul. As
you are
know.
A gentle soul.
I have anxiety disorder and I have major depressive disorder. I might just be like, I don't care to fight. I just let it happen.
I don't think I'd be able to fight you in a cage match.
No, I'm too charming. You don't want to fight me.
No, I don't. But the minute I say that is the minute that you strike.
Yeah, that's when I bite you right in your carotid artery.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, Mike did take on that dog, that giant dog with his sack of pennies. So
I go to sleep with your blood drying on my face. Yeah, I think I'd win.
Aiden Barr, what is the organization's greatest need in terms of prospects? So he's asking by position.
I would say
right now, winger.
Scoring wingers, yeah.
Yeah, scoring wingers.
I think that you could also definitely make a case for right side D, but I would put the priority at scoring wingers just because, I mean, we love Booch. And Booch is great and he's fun, but he's 23 now. And, you know, after Booch, like, in terms of guys we can call prospects without having to lie to ourselves, you know, there's the European guys, Meskin and Lindquist, who the hell knows what they're going to be. And then, of course, you have Kravstov. I don't know. There's not a lot else in the organization to be too excited about.
Yeah, and it's really just Kravstov to an extent because Meskinen and Lindquist are like.
Yeah, I think you could call Meskinen a prospect.
Oh, they're 100% prospects, but they're not like.
No, they're not future guys. You're hoping they turn into third line players.
Yes, you're hoping they turn into depth players. Yes, 100%. Yeah. So, we're in agreement on that.
And I feel like that's why you and I are agreeing on this is there's a pretty clear need from an organizational standpoint to develop those scoring wingers. And it only adds fuel to the fire, the fact that the Rangers haven't done the best job of doing that in terms of history, you know, in terms of actually developing guys like that. And the Rangers are very, very keen on bringing in elite talent via free agency. They haven't done a great job of developing it, especially when it comes to scoring line wingers.
There you go. I think we're on the same page so far through
Except
these questions. Well, yeah, we'll discuss the fight thing when we're fighting in the cage. Josh Zarkin, after his preseason goal, he also had a shootout goal. What is the benchmark for how we should view Kravstov this coming KHL season? You're looking for growth. You know, he's going to get a top six role and really be one of the guys on that team. So when you think about the playoff season that he had, it's amazing, right? He had one of the high, actually he had the highest under 20 goal scoring playoffs in KHL history with 11 points in 16 games. In the regular season, Kravstov was what you would expect for a player, you know, of his age. He had 7 points in 35 games. I think if you get him around 0.4 points per game in the KHL, I think that would be enough growth to justify it being a success. Anything above that, I think, would be just spectacular for an 18 turning 19 year old in the middle of this season.
Yeah, for those who are curious, he plays for Traktor Chelyabinsk.
Yes, yeah, I didn't even want to attempt.
There's no way I got that right, but the logo of the team is a polar bear, Joe, that has bitten a hockey stick in half.
It's just eating it.
Appears to be eating a hockey stick in half. Like you said, I think the baseline is to look at, you know, how much does he improve from that first season in the KHL? You know, he played 3 games in 2016-17, just erase those. Those don't count. And, you know, a lot of people like to look at, you know, his path compared to a guy like Panarin's. And I feel like that's kind of a good guide, right, is to look at, you know, the path of other young Russian players, especially wingers who came up through the KHL, and to have an idea of what they did, especially in terms of, you know, we all know what he's supposed to be. He's supposed to be a first-line winger, is what the Rangers are hoping they found in Kravstov. And that means we want to see him generate offense, put a ton of shots on net, and generate a lot of primary points, and be a guy who doesn't utterly depend on the power play, but can certainly do work on the power play. And, you know, he's already off to a promising start. And like you said, he should be getting that featured role on Tractor. And I want to see, you know, I want to see big numbers out of him. But I'm also, I know enough to know that, yeah, you know, be relatively patient with him. He's going to turn 19 in December. You know, he's still... You know, he's still very young, and you know the Rangers kind of knew what they were doing by drafting a guy who had a great playoffs. You know, he had that amazing playoff with 6 goals and 5 assists in 16 games last year in the KHL, and you know he has a lot of the, you know, the physical traits you want in a big dominant winger, but. You know, he's also, the sense is that he's still kind of a little bit of a diamond in the rough. There's still some work to be done, right? So, you know, he's a little bit of a project, but his ceiling is, you know, out of the building high.
Sky high.
And I feel like that it's an important thing. Like, if he comes in at, you know, like, you know, a kind of mediocre season where, let's say, you know, compared to, I don't know, it's I don't know enough about the KHL to know really the strength of his team, because of course that's also a pretty big factor. I mean, last year, you know, the leading scorer on his team had 42 points in 55 games, right? So, you know, how does that compare to the rest of the KHL? I'm honestly not even sure. I mean, we have to find a good way to measure what we would call success for him.
You just really, want to see growth. I just want to see growth.
Yeah, that's where I was steering towards. We don't expect him to put up Ilya Kovalchuk numbers.
No, that would be nice, though.
It would be pretty nice. Just expect him to, you know, improve off of last year's numbers and really pay a very close attention on, you know, how many shots he's generating and, you know, what his goal total looks like. And, you know, hopefully we'll get to see plenty of highlights of him doing things that we all believe he can do. And
yeah, I mean, let me tell you this. Yeah. If Krafstov has that 11 points in 16 game, if he brings that next year, it's your jaw's on the floor. Honestly.
So here's something to keep in mind, though, Joe, which is I just checked this very quickly. Last season in the KHL, among players who were under 20 years old, okay, under 20 years old, Eli Tolvanen, you know, the highly, highly, highly regarded prospect, was the only player north of 13 points last season, right? So it's really hard to put up points in the KHL when you're a teenager. And, you know, Eli Tolvanen, for those that don't know, is a prospect for the Predators, and he's one of, like, a top 5 prospect in the league, a lot of people believe. And I'm one of those people, by the way. But if we just want to see the growth, but we also want to set a realistic expectation, which is why I took, you know, it took the couple seconds to actually look up what a successful season might even look for a teenager in Russia. And we all want to see the big numbers, but let it come.
Let's put this into perspective.
A huge
too.
Kid and with a ton of potential. Let it fall together here.
Artemi Panarin, who is widely considered one of the best players in the NHL right now, at 18 years old, and he's a little bit older than Krafstov. Krafstov is a middler player, which means his birthday is in the end of December. So he starts this year 18. He'll finish this year 19. Mm-hmm. Panarin is born, you know, in October, so kind of the same deal with him. They're not the same age the whole season, whatever. In his 18-year season, Panarin had 18-year-old season. He had 9 points in 20 KHL games. In his 19-year-old season, he had 21 points in 40 games. So just to show you that, and that's a guy who had 82 points in 81 games last year in the NHL. So you don't necessarily need to have those explosive, you know, ridiculous junior year seasons that you'd expect from like a kid who's playing in the OHL. But no, I think if Krafstov has, like I said, 0.4, maybe 0.45 points per game, you're going to be thrilled with that. That would be a very, very
promising sign.
Yes, that would shut all the Wallstrom nonsense up immediately. Tom Ertz Jr., Blue Shirt Banterer, podcaster. What high-profile player will the Rangers acquire before the start of the 2019-2020 season? Oddly enough, I think it's Panarin, because on the Blue Shirts Breakaway podcast, one of the three podcasts on the forum, August 25th at New York City, $20, free beer, and you get to listen to me and Mike, along with the Garden Faithful and Blue Shirts Breakaway guys. The Blue Shirt Breakaway guys had... oh, God, I forgot his name now. The guy, yes, from the Columbus Blue Jackets, who said that there was a sense around the league that Panarin wants to be a New York Ranger. So there's that.
That is fun. I mean, you know, we've heard a little bit about that already. You know, that's kind of been the rumor, the scuttlebutt that that's where he'd like to be. And, yeah, that would be fun. Obviously, I think that Panarin is the right guy from the upcoming, you know, free agency, meaning next summer's free agent pool that you kind of want, right? He's a top 10 or top 15 player in the league, depending on who you ask. And yeah, I like Smee the Panarin plenty. I feel like that would be, you also kind of have to ask yourself, like, all right, well, we want to talk about guys who are young enough where it makes sense to have them around for a team like this. And I feel like Panarin is just the right age where he's right inside that range where it would still make a lot of sense. He also, you know, doesn't have too much wear and tear in terms of, like, you know, the NHL
physicality
game,
of the NHL.
A great deal more physical than the KHL.
The
so.
Thickness of the NHL, if
yeah,
you will.
Yeah, a lot of thick boys.
A lot of thickness. Yeah, that's my bet. I don't think Panarin helps them this year, but I think if you get Panarin next year and you kind of revamp things, because there are a lot of free agents, there's a lot of maneuverability that the Rangers can make, I think it makes an enormous difference. I really do. Dan Carozzi, which Rangers prospect are you most excited for, either next season or in the near future? Do we consider Hedel a prospect still? We have to, right?
You have to.
It's Hedel for me, and then it's Krovstov. And then, actually, you know what? Krovstov and Keandre Miller are kind of on the same level for me. I think, that's my answer.
I like that. For me, it's...
Ryan Lindgren, your favorite defenseman of all time.
It's Hedel and then Libor Hájek.
Ooh, actually, Hájek is another good one.
And I like Hájek just because I feel like he could be that you know, second pair or first pair two-way guy who plays the kind of game that, like, you watch him play and he doesn't make any highlight reel plays, like, you know, like a Roman Josi or something, but then at the end of the game you look at the box score and you look at the possession numbers and the zone exits and everything and you go, like, holy crap, he's like, you know, just a robot, just makes nothing but solid plays.
Robot.
And you need...
Good old Robit.
Developing a guy like that would be fantastic. And it would also make, I think, a lot of people feel a little bit better about that, you know, the big McDonough trade. And that's not the real reason why I'm excited about him. I after watching a little bit of him play and, you know, reading the scouting reports and doing some homework on him, I feel like there's very good reason to be excited about him, especially because he is pretty close to being, you know, at the NHL level. You know, he's going to be trying to make some noise in this upcoming training camp. And you know, Hedel, I was lucky enough to see last season live in Rangers preseason, Hedel score that overtime winning goal and getting named first star, and that was all I really needed to get on the Philip Hedel train. He's definitely an exciting player. I still have that weird gut feeling that he'll end up, you know, playing wing at the NHL level, but after Hayes signing a one-year deal, I'm not so sure now.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? Way more. Speed round. Andrew May. Chances Tyron and cracks the roster out of training camp. I'm going to say, at this point,
4%.
Yeah, there's no... I mean, I'm not going to say zero. I guess I'll say 3%. There's just... A Price is Right to do. Yeah, I did. There's no, like, for what? You know what I mean? What is he going to specifically do that they don't
the team
already
of
have?
Lettieri or Meskinen or Lindquist,
yeah.
Or
I think one of the problems that Ronning is facing is he's a small guy, he's a hard worker, and he put up, like, ridiculous goal totals in the WHL. And there's this expectation that he's going to be that guy. Like, if he scores 20 goals for Hartford next year, it's an enormous win for him.
Oh, and it's I think a huge people win need for to, the organization.
Yeah,
too.
I think people it need to be, realize that.
That would be rock solid. If he proves himself to be
rock
an AHL-level goal scorer, that tells you he can be a depth NHLer one day.
Rock lobster.
Just let it, you know, let it happen. A lot like, you know, Krovstov in the KHL. This is just like another version of that, right? Just further down the line where a guy like, you know, Ty Ronning, who's 20. Keep in mind, he's 20. He's not in any... There's no rush here. Like, Lettieri, for context, is 23. Let him kind of figure it out in the AHL. You know, he has three AHL games under... No, I'm sorry. He has 15 AHL games under his belt. Because he played, 12?
Yeah, he must have been
two
on
years ago.
Yeah.
But only three last year. So, you know, give him some time.
Give him a little bit of... Yeah, just a little bit of time.
He'll be all right. He's just
Michael Silvers, how would another significant injury to Zibanejad, which would be 3 in 3 years, factor into whether or not the Rangers decide to change course and keep Hayes? Or do you think it's pretty much cut and dry that Hayes is gone by the deadline regardless? So Zibanejad's injuries are the femur, breaking the femur, and it was a concussion, right, last year?
He has a couple of concussions.
He's had a bunch of concussions through his career. I think if he has another concussion, you have to start having the discussion. But, like, it's not like he has chronic back injuries, let's say, or like Marian Gaborik, who had, chronic groin injuries before he came to the Rangers. So I don't think that's a factor. I think Hayes is gone. I think that's the writing is on
I
the
think,
wall.
Yeah,
is there?
It's a foregone conclusion to me that Hayes is gone, regardless of what would
look at us. We're on the same page today. Jason Silberman, great podcast, guys. That's how you get your goddamn question read. Although we read all the questions. Guess for captain of the Rangers next year. Also, Hank's sticking with us during the rebuild, but do you think he needs the team to be competitive to an extent for that to continue to be the case? No on Hank. I think Hank likes New York. I think he loves the idea of being a forever Ranger. I think he knows his number is probably going into the rafters when all is said and done. And as much as he wants to win, I think he had an option to get out and he didn't take it. And I think that says a lot more about where his head's at than anything else. I think Kreider is going to be the captain. That's my guess. Mike?
The more I think about it, the more I like that pick, Joe. I feel like next year it's no captain or Kreider, really, is where I stand now. I would have said Zuccarello a couple months ago, and I feel like I was saying that plenty, but I don't think we've heard enough or seen enough of Zuccarello. Like, I know Quinn, not sure Quinn even met him yet this offseason. So, I feel like it's likely Crides, or I also expect Shattenkirk to wear a letter and, Stahl to keep his A. And I feel like that's kind of what's going to happen. Crides will wear an A and maybe eventually the C, but we'll have to kind of see. Kreider being captain, makes a lot of sense with Quinn behind the bench and given Kreider's history with the team.
Chris, I don't really wear glasses. That's his name. It's a good
name. Really
wear actually, I skipped over somebody, but we'll go to Chris first. With Stastny gone from the Jets and with the way their contracts played out, could we see a deal involving Hayes/Trouba with any other pieces needed? That's a possibility because both teams would be inheriting risk of a player who's a UFA, although I think Trouba's an RFA next year, Hayes is an UFA. What I do think, though, is Winnipeg is very cognizant of the fact of what they are and where they are, which is Winnipeg, and I don't see Kevin Hayes wanting to re-sign there. Do you get more of a chance if you show him what it's like for a year? Yes, but I think you're much more likely, if you're going to see a move for Hayes before the year begins, I think you're much more likely to see that move at the beginning of the year with Columbus for Panarin than you are with Trouba for the Jets. Mike?
I line up with you. I did check. Trouba will be an RFA.
I know.
Like, it would be fantastic, Trouba for Hayes straight up, just especially because Trouba is an RFA, but I don't see that happening. I mean, that would, again, it would be pretty great. And it would certainly, the Jets definitely need a center, and the Rangers definitely wouldn't mind another guy who on the right side who can play, even if, they might not necessarily be in the position where they want to be handing out long-term deals after signing Shea to what they signed him to. But, yeah, I I just feel like he's going somewhere. I don't see why Winnipeg would be where he wants to go. Like I said, I feel like Calgary makes a ton of sense for him. And yeah, that's kind of where I stand.
And in the same type of
on everything I wanted
the to same say. Vein, Anthony McHale asked, "Hayes to Winnipeg for Christian Vesalainen, who was their first round pick at the end of the first round last year, 2017, and the conditional pick we got from Tampa Bay, which would be a second that turns into a first if they win the Stanley Cup." The same thing. I don't think a team like Winnipeg is in the running for Hayes because I think they know they're not going to be able to keep him long term. So, yeah. Unless you have anything to add, Mike, I'll go to the next question.
No, moving down the line.
Larry Bubbs, does Hayes simply not want to be a New York Ranger anymore? I think the reality here is Hayes would have loved to sign a long-term deal in New York, but the Rangers didn't want to do it without, you know, no protection. And Hayes wanted to control his future. I don't think it has anything to do with Hayes not wanting to be in New York. I don't think it has anything to do with Hayes being lazy. I think it has everything to do with the fact that Hayes and his agent are well aware of the reality of the situation, which is that there's a glut of centers and there's a lot of stuff that, you know, is going on, and he's not in the long-term plans.
I think, you know, again, I don't want to just reiterate everything you're saying, but I just want to build off of that and say, you know, guys, there's a lot more that goes into contracts than just being like, I don't want to be in New York. I mean, maybe what was most important to Hayes is that job security, is that contract security, is the idea of knowing, you know, he's a 26-year-old, you know, center who's coming off a career year. He wants to sign that contract where he's going to be for the, you know, his money contract, right? That's the next contract he's really thinking about. So if the Rangers weren't able to offer him, you know, that contract that a guy his age is looking for, you know, that 6-year deal where he makes the bulk of his money in his career, then, you know, it's pretty clear that that's not just on Kevin Hayes. The Rangers were the second party in this, and there must have been enough distance between the two parties where he said, all right, I'll take the 1-year deal and I'll see where it goes from there. And that's kind of where it goes from. I mean, Joe, you and I don't know Kevin Hayes. We don't know if he just hates New York. I don't think that's the case.
I don't think that's the case either.
I don't think that's the case at all, no.
I absolutely do not. You would have known if that was the case, for
it
sure.
Would have, yeah. It would have been something that, you know, slowly, you know, oozed out of, you know, the locker room through Brooks or someone else with, or almost only Brooks, really, is the only one who would do that kind of digging. But yeah, I don't think that's the case.
Final question. Clem Fandago, and this is the joke that I've gotten a million times. What's the return the Rangers will get at the deadline for trading Hayes to Tampa Bay?
I get it.
I don't really have an answer to that, because in reality, he's not going to Tampa. So let's do this. Where do you think Hayes goes at the deadline, Mike?
I've already said like 5 times this show.
Well, I didn't hear any of them. So
Calgary is my guess.
See, I think if I disagree, because Calgary is not going to be a contender.
They might convince themselves that they're a Kevin Hayes away from being a contender.
I guess.
I feel like that's the most likely location as of today. As of the trade deadline, I would have a different guess, but I can't tell you what that is.
One more question from Dave, true New Yorker. Other than Buchnevich,
I was in the middle of answering the question, you son of a bitch.
Which Ranger do you see improving most next season? It's got to be D'Angelo or Hayes.
I hope it's Joe Fortunato. That's what I hope.
Ooh, it could be me. David Quinn, like, beautiful minds, maybe gives me a sandwich.
You better improve if you have any hope in that goddamn cage of a match with me. I'm going to bite your ear off and spit it down your throat.
You know what?
I'm going to make you swallow your own ear, and then I say, can you hear me in there, in your stomach?
Say it right to my stomach. Anyway, again, the forum, August 25th. I'll post the link to it.
I didn't get to answer that last question. What are you doing?
You did answer the question.
No, I didn't.
Oh, you were just yelling? What's your answer?
I don't even care anymore.
Ryan Lindgren, that's your answer. Anthony Viola, John J. Porter, Alex Gardner, John Reppy, Johnny Elo, Eric Cohn, Alexander Ricard.
My guess.
Under Quinn? You're picking a goalie?
Yeah, just because fuck you, that's why. How's that?
Daniel DeGene, Matt Bader, 50, Guy from Montana, Stink Fleeman, Keith Franchillo, Mike Offit, Trevor Kempner, Gabriel Vargas, Fancy Lawrence, Dan Carozzi, David L. Singer, Andre Chicagoff, Arch Williams, Bob Kawa, Tall Guy Robert, Scott Potash, Chris Habibi, James Dangles, Danny Santiago, Grumpy Smokey, Igor Zatlovsky, Thomas Osa, Crispy, and Michael Silvers. Thank you all for donating.
Thank you so much, everybody.
You're great.
Absolutely tell your friends great. About the live show.
Yeah, tell your friends about the live show, the forum. So the link to purchase will be
sweating.
In the article. Honestly, that's going up about this. You're listening to this, you're going to know. So it's going to be great. Do it. Mike is a whale. And I...
At least I'm not a jerk.
I am a colossal squid. Colossal squids that fight with the sperm whales down deep into the ocean.
As far as we know, those are like, it's a 50-50 match. We're not sure which ones win all the time.
Just like the cage match. You know
what? The sperm whales are often found with the tentacle scars on them, which would lead us to believe that they win more often than not.
Or the squid just allows them to live because it's friends with them.
I just, there's sometimes when I just want to take a wiffle bat and hit you right in the teeth.
Well, good night, everybody.
Good night.